strength, my power.
Record. Okay, here we're going. Okay, I will really try. Ellen will try to light the fire.
Yeah, that's not a thing.
Oh, now I gotta look that one up.
When I hear the music line.
I love when I hear a song, I gotta play it. That's a good one.
Welcome to 2019. No one has a lighter.
Oh, I do.
Okay. Oh, yeah.
I have two.
All right, perfect.
The Cadillac. Come on, baby, light
the Cadillac. The super Cadillac.
Absolutely. I just wasn't listening. I was in the present moment on my phone.
Okay.
Oh, my God.
All right. While Ellen is trying to light the fire...
Chair over here somewhere. Mary Beth can't be near.
We need another couple minutes.
Because
I'll play the Yorkshire.
Come back here.
Arnie, this was a really good idea to come out here.
So you go.
Awesome. Okay.
Yeah. Oh, Ellen! Come on, baby, light my fire.
That's true. They all have.
I think Mary Beth can't be near propane though.
There you go.
Oh, I really
want to
like Sans and Ding.
Sans and Ding. I want a Sans and Ding.
I love Woodsy Card.
Thanks for smoking,
Marla. Now there's 27.
Yeah, exactly. There's not always one. Yes, there is always one. This group is not always one. Okay. I hit record, but now we've only got.
Okay.
Okay. I don't know where I'm gonna teach from, but it's not just a minute. Yes.
Right here.
Can I pick up?
No.
All right. Okay.
I'll just sit here.
There you go.
Don't.
You're gonna be on another chair.
Really.
Okay. So I'm glad we're outside. If it gets too cold or something, we'll go inside. But I think we're all right now. So, so each weekend, one of the things that we're going to try to go over is what the demon is of each chakra. And this is just one more way to look at yourself, to look at your goals, to dig into your chart. I feel like everything, as I said at the beginning, and we're going to talk about this. The third year is about weaving some of this stuff in and out. You obviously saw that with Lisa's lecture this morning. Like, she probably told you what the bow was for. You've been doing that every year, but who knew that that's what it was for? You were told. Right, you were told that. Not everyone remembered it, but or it wasn't right. But you did it. But you didn't know why. You need to hear it over and over. And so you could have actually heard it three times, and then maybe today that.
Sunk in
for you. And that is what people usually say happen about the third year, is that something happens. Some people will say like, oh my gosh, I learned more the first weekend of the third year than I did the whole 2 years combined. But the truth is, you never could have heard those things, or they were said and you didn't hear them. You now have the language. You now have the sort of foundation. You have the trust in your classmates. You have the trust, you're gaining it in us. Hopefully you will gain it in us. You know, and you will see us sort of doing that. So we are asking you to sort of bring it. But what I want to say is that so I'll get to a bunch of stuff here, but also there's going to be things that people do that trigger you or trigger us, or we trigger you, or we say things. And this is the place to dig into that. Because on some level, this matters a lot, and on some level, this doesn't matter at all. Like, if you get mad at your classmate, I'm sorry, but that's what we're here for. Or if I trigger you, or you trigger that, sort of like, this is a space to work through it. You guys have created this space and this container for each other to try things new. Maybe you're not usually a smartass, and today you're gonna do this. Maybe you're gonna poke at someone a little bit, in a little way, and they're gonna sort of react, and then you're gonna be able to work through it. And I sort of encourage you guys to do that. And I also encourage you to be really curious
about things and about yourself. And that's what I like about this book, to be honest. This book is the book that I depend on a lot. If you haven't read it, or you read it 2 years ago or last year, it can really help if you read this about this chakra. And so, like, and I will say this, I have a psychological bent, I'm a social worker, so I like digging into some of the reasons why this stuff happened in our lives. So you heard some of my story around, so my parents were divorced when I was little, my dad was gay, grew up in a crazy household with, like, if you ever saw The Birdcage, the, like, gay father was, like, one where I was there for 2 weeks and my mother is, like, a Texas debutante. So,
oh my goodness.
I went from, like, these two different worlds of just sort of both of which were equally as crazy.
Right.
And back and forth and sort of all of these things. But, like, so I may have abandonment fears, right? I may have certain things. And as you learn more about me or you hear about my chart, you'll sort of be able to put those pieces together. But it's like weaving these pieces together. But I like this book because it does make you look at some of the psychological aspects of it. But it also helps you move forward. Because what you don't want, as we were talking about, was getting stuck in your own story, right? If you're stuck in that wound and you're continuing to tell the same story over and over and you can't sort of get through it, you gotta do something to shift it. And that's why I say sometimes, like, maybe you need a healing. Maybe you need to do craniosacral. Maybe you need to do a little inner child work. Maybe if you are really stuck in a trauma, if you had a maybe significant trauma under the age of 5, that may take a deeper piece of work, right? It may take something that is maybe more in the psychological realm, like EMDR, which, if you don't know what it is, I can tell you about it, but it's like rapid eye movement. And that's been known to move people through some PTSD things. You know, what is sucking the life out of you? What are these pieces? But what I like about this book is that it helps you look at each chakra. So you want to look at the first chakra and say, like, okay, is this excessive or deficient? What would this mean? You know, all these things that are in your chart of, like, how do I balance this? Like, for me, you guys heard, I have a really deficient first chakra. So the best thing I could do is every morning to do these energy exercises, which we forgot to do and we're going to do. But, like, the, like, stomping, right? The stomping, the scratching your feet. Like, if I ground myself.
That's circling.
Well, there's a board up there.
It's circling us?
It's been circling us for a while.
Oh, the clock.
Is that what it is?
I think someone's dying.
Sorry, I'm so sorry, Ad. I'm so sorry. I was trying to figure out if it was a hawk, and I'm like, that doesn't look like a hawk.
It's a hawk.
No, it's a turkey.
It's a turkey belcher.
A turkey?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Sorry, Ad.
It's all right.
I thought it was going to be one of those good things that we can look at.
It probably is. Probably is. Or it thinks one of us is dying. So I like this because it helps you look at, like, what are the roots. But in the first chakra, one of the things that, you know, it's what it is about is survival, right? This is about survival. And if you don't have your basic needs met of survival, you can't move up to the next levels. And that's why the first chakra is so important. And I like thinking about the demon of this chakra. And there's usually one chapter on it, but these are usually the big kickers. So in the first chakra, the demon is fear. In the second chakra, it's guilt. In the third chakra, it's shame. In the fourth chakra, it's grief. In the fifth chakra, it's lies. In the sixth chakra, it's illusion. Now, one of those is your worst demon, right? If not all of them, right? It's, you know, one of these. And so if you can take each of these demons and take it and look at it and think about, what kind of first chakra do I have? How does fear run me in probably every single area? How can I, and what is a realistic fear and what is an unrealistic fear? And what I will say is all of these demons, the thing you have to realize about them is they were survival. They helped you survive. You can't just judge them. You don't want to never have fear. If you never had fear, you would be dead. Like, you want fear. Fear served you. But the question is, where did it stop serving you? Where does it stop serving you and start inhibiting you? And it's that edge and that piece which is where you want to do the work, right? Because these things can drive you. Guilt, there's a lot of healthy guilt. Guilt can be a good ethical compass. You start to feel guilty and you check yourself. But if you feel so guilty that it runs you and people have control over you by making you feel guilty, that's where that, right? It's not good. So all of these things, I think, are important to really look at. And as we look at our goals, as we look at the different pieces of, when we teach you about the goals, it's not just about, am I going to achieve this goal? For me, it's about, how do we set a goal that's realistic for us to achieve it? And so, you can think about the first chakra. Like, I have this goal, and how would it affect, what does my tribe say about this goal? Is this my goal that I really want? Like, let's say it's to lose weight. Is it that I really want to lose weight? Or is it that my tribe has been telling me that I wanted to lose weight? Will this affect me financially one way or the other? Did this have to do with money or security? Or does having a larger body make me feel safer? Right? And can I honor that piece that I feel safer? And do I want to keep holding on to it, or do I want to let go of it? Right? And so if you can take these questions and be curious about them, about yourself, about your own first chakra, and about how those things affect you, it will really serve you. And by digging into, what am I scared of? What are these pieces? Where does it inhibit me? Where does it serve me? I feel like it's sort of like holding it up and looking at it. Now, you can see I'm a creative idealist, right? I want you to be curious about each of these things in different ways. And I think that it will be able to serve you if you can. And the thing that I, when this, I'm just gonna read this one little part about fear that I really like. And I think this is really hard, because sometimes you can get to this and say like, okay, well, of course I'm scared because this terrible thing happened to me and I should be scared. And then how do you chip away at that? Like, third chakra, shame, then we'll do a big lecture on shame. Shame is a big one. Like, right, shame is a really big one. It's not like you're gonna say like, oh, I feel ashamed because this thing happened to me and now I'm never gonna feel ashamed again. Shame, undoing shame and unpacking it is lifelong work. The fears that you guys have, the demons, are lifelong work. And we're asking you, and I feel like it's sort of stepping into taking one step about it. And this will also, when you're thinking about the goals, this will also come about. Like, you may have this goal, this big goal, but we're gonna ask you, like, how do I get to the root of this? And then how do I make one tiny step in the next 6 months to change this? How do I make one small step? Because that small step can usually be a big one. But you're not going to probably get your house in 6 months, right? But you may be able to take one major step toward it. So this thing about fear that I really like, it says, fear is the belief that something awful might happen, while faith is a belief that something good will happen. Although the results are different, the causes are the same. Both are beliefs that govern our behavior and influence the way we feel, right? So in some books, maybe like Conversations with God, there's different books, Seed of the Soul a little bit, you know, you can choose fear or you can choose love, right? And how do you sort of, this is like, they say that in every choice, but this is the same, like faith, you know, this belief that something awful will happen, or a belief that only good, you know, or that something good will happen, those, like, how do we balance those and find those? But the piece that it says here that is the way to help with fear is, it says, if we can replace unreasonable fear with reasonable faith, then we have the natural antidote to our first chakra demon. And so I think that's the piece that I like about that, is that, where is fear serving us? Where did it come from? What are the pieces about it? And then how do I see what is unreasonable of this fear? And then how can I replace just a piece of it with some faith? And it's hard to find faith in the good in this world sometimes. It's hard to find faith in, when you see things, it's hard to find faith as a healer in your Lisa, and she's witnessing trauma or hearing about trauma and all the bad things in the world, but you hear her faith, right? You can call it resilience, you can call it, but what can you do? And that's a way of healing, is developing and strengthening your faith in something that can then provide a little separate, like an antidote. This is on page 61 of this. But I like this, and I like digging into this, and I feel like, I think that this gives you, also the other thing I like about this is that at the end, it will tell you about the traumas and abuses. So if you think about what could have caused this, why did you do this, physical abuse, what does that look like, injuries, surgeries. Sometimes you'll look at this and you won't really have an idea of why you have the fear, and then you can think of something. And then it poor boundaries, right? It goes through objectifying the body. It talks about the character structures. And then at the end, it gives you some tools about what to do. There are yoga exercises at the end. There are grounding exercises. There's breath work. So for me, this book and these, you know, really, if you are working through the chakras and you're wanting to understand the chakras better and sort of tying them into it and then thinking about how it helps you, and will, this is the book that I think is really good, and it's also a great one as practicum stuff, right? If you read something or you hear a story about something like that.
Do any of you guys, other teachers or TAs, have experiences with this or have thoughts about the demons of the chakras or anything I said make you want to say something? You do?
Yeah, sure. So this whole thing about fear, like when I was
going to school, I was going to therapy at the same time, and one of the things that my therapist used to do is he would ask me, like, I would say, I don't know, he'd tell me to do something and I'd say, I don't want to do it. That was a typical situation.
And then you're paying somebody to tell you what to do, and then they tell you what to do and then you don't do it.
Well, that would be how it would start. Okay. But then he would say, why? And I'd say, well, I'm afraid. And
good to know.
And then he would say, all right, what are you afraid of? And that process of seriously thinking what you're afraid of and actually like either saying it out loud or writing it down and then maybe saying why a couple times to what you write down or say to get to the root of it is such a freeing experience, because what you find is 3/4 of the time you're making some assumption that's making you afraid, or you're painting some scenario that is like ludicrous, like it could happen, but you got a better shot at winning the lottery, but you're still afraid of that thing. And so actually addressing the fear, saying what it is, and really getting to the root of what that fear is, 9 times out of 10 takes that fear away, because you look at it and you say, oh, or you say, I'm afraid. Okay. Well, I can't go that example, but I mean, you know, so like one thing that my youngest daughter has a problem with is a drug addict, you know, and so a lot of times fear about that would drive me to do all kinds of things that none of which were served me. And so digging through that, you know, it would be, what are you afraid of? I'm afraid I'm gonna get a phone call or the police are gonna show up at my door and tell me that my daughter died. You know, Kate, you know, that's life in this world. And then it was like, okay, so what about that? Well, I'm afraid that I could have done something that would have prevented it. And then you keep walking down that path and find out that the real issue is I'm completely frustrated because there's absolutely positively nothing that I know that I could do that would help resolve this. And it bumps right into my, you know, fixer, rescuer archetype. Mm-hmm. And that's what's gotten stuck. And so that whole process of walking through what are you afraid of gets you to the root of something which enables you to move forward. And I think that's what you're talking about, Arden, which is, you know, the fear is the demon because the demon keeps you stuck. And this is all about getting unstuck. So
it is. It's what keeps you stuck. And fear is usually, these demons are the ones that are at the root. Because under anger is usually fear. Right? So some of these other feelings you have, actually, or jealousy or aggression or all this, usually the bottom line is one of these things. You want to talk?
Yeah, you can tell by my body.
Yeah, I can tell. It's fine.
So badly love this stuff. I just want to add a couple of things. The 4th step of the 12 steps of fellowship program in recovery is very complicated, but one piece of it on fear is literally, and I just took a client through it, I had forgotten this, she was stuck on writing her fears. So you start with, hers was, I'm worried that I have to do everything in my house. I'm the mom. I have to do everything. That's, I'm afraid that if I don't do everything, no, it won't get done. And it's just what Ellen said, only I just want to give it in a more visceral example. We could do it for each other anytime. Why? And then the person says something, why? Why? And I could see why she couldn't do it alone. It's a lot harder. And she talked it out, and she literally got to, because my mother didn't do it for me, because I... And the thing she was afraid of is not what she's afraid of. Right. So I just want...
The fear of being like her mother.
Well, and it ended up being, the fear was, with the very end, she got to, well, because I'm not God. And it's like almost at the bottom of everyone is that I'm trying to be God or universe or whatever. Yeah. It's so powerful. And but the thing that I love about it is I'm wasting my time on shit I think I'm afraid of when it's actually not what I'm afraid of.
Right.
Then I want to add something Kelly did for me 2 summers ago or whatever number of time. I was wanting to go in an RV and just take off and really close to doing it. And we were laying on the beach and she goes, which I love, she prefaced it by saying, I'm going to ask you a question. I don't know whether she used the words, it's kind of edgy, or I'm going to lean in, do you care? And I'm like, oh, she said, what are you afraid of? And I said, I didn't know I was afraid of this, but out of my mouth, I said, that I'm going to get killed. And then I went, well, wait, aren't you? Isn't everybody afraid of that? She's like, no. And then what she said was, this is where she asked permission. She goes, so what if you did? And I was like, fuck, that's brilliant. Like, took the charge all away. And I was like, yeah, what if I did get killed? Big deal. I would just get killed. Totally took the charge away. So I just wanted to share those two things. The why, and then take the charge away.
And saying why. Asking one of your classmates, why are you scared? What is under this, right? You're trying to take these layers off, and as you do it, you dig deep.
Yes. Good. Boy, this is so good for me, because ultimately I want to be able to be a speaker, and I want to be able to talk. And fear to me is, and this is so good to be in this group, because when I'm around like-minded people that are in alignment to want it better themselves, I'm plugged into that. So my original family of origin is where all the fears came from.
Yep.
That's where I learned all the bullshit.
Right, absolutely.
And so certain people are going to remind me of certain people
in
my family. So there's mom, there's dad, there's my brother, there's my aunt, there's my grandfather, and
wait
so on.
Wait till you get to the fourth weekend family constellation work.
Oh, are you going to do it?
Yes.
So what's happening there is, and I'm realizing fear is just imagined, it's not even real. So, and I'm realizing the core is the love, but when you really hate yourself, there's no way you're going to get to the fear. And for me to connect with God, I need to be in my heart. I can't connect to that. And the other thing is, stop thinking. Thinking was my biggest addiction. And so once I let go of the thinking, on the other side, the thinking mind is God. It's like, that's where the knowing is. That's where the peace and that silence, and it's incredible how all the answers come in.
And I think one piece about this that I think is true, what you said, is that sometimes the fear is real, right? And that's okay. Because sometimes things are real. Sometimes it isn't really about love. Sometimes people have real reasons to be very scared and to have been very scared as kids, especially if you've had abuse, if you were raped, if you were, I mean, even something that you may think was like, somebody was writing in their homework, I can't remember who it was, I try not to disclose who you are if I can help it, but sometimes I do. But someone was talking about an experience they had where a teacher shut them down in like third grade. And that they had an experience where someone else shut them down, okay? Right? Someone else shut them down, but that's real. Like, what I want to say is that was significant enough of a trauma for you that you have carried it on of it and realizing it and then saying, okay, that's an unreasonable fear, how do I give myself a little bit of a reasonable faith, right? Because what I don't want you to do is judge it or think like, well, I was never raped or I was never sexually abused, so I don't have any reason to be scared. That actually is not helpful, right? You need to understand where your fears are and honor them so that then you can move forward in it. So I'm not disagreeing with you. I'm just saying that it is about love, but I think that can become, if you get too caught in that you have to go to the spiritual piece and it's all about love, sometimes you
sometimes you can't then own the parts of yourself that really are darker or scared, right? We all have light sides and dark sides, and the work is owning both of those and feeling okay with them. And knowing that you can be dark or you can go dark, and sometimes people have the capacity to own that and some people don't. Like some people can hold where for you to go dark, and those people you need in your life if you can go dark. Right? We need people who actually have experienced darkness so that they can hold darkness. Raylene is a good person.
I kind of love the dark.
And you live in it sometimes. Do you want to disclose some information about your darkness that you can hold it? Why you can, not personal information, just your capacity?
Yeah, or personal.
But whatever. You see how I teach? This is a problem. Because I'll be like, you said this major vulnerable thing, and I'm going to lay it out in the whole class.
Honestly, this is
you have to watch out if you're near me, especially for this striking distance.
Yeah, this is one of the things that I've owned about myself, and I've tried to figure it out in my chart, because I've been, one of the things last year Reese gave me in my first chakra, I had child, and I think he left me with child, and he made it good girl, bad girl, and I was like, oh yeah, because in my inner light, I'm like, hey, you know, I hung with this really good crowd, but I was also very good friends with all the bad kids, right? And so there's this very fine line between the two things for me. And so we truly live, and this school sort of helped me understand what was going on inside of me and then inside of every human. And I think when we forget, I really believe that when we forget that we have a lower self, and that lower self is like the, right, it's the fighting, the fucking, that it is like lower self. And we all have it, and there's no getting rid of it. And honestly, I wouldn't want to, because it's where all the fun is, right? It's where all the fun and the passion is. We also have that, like, I'm like, we have the ability to see someone hurt an animal, for example, and we at the same time have the ability to walk over and stab him in the heart, right? Like, you fucker, you're done. And also hold him in complete and utter compassion for everything that must have happened to that person to have them end up in that place. And the trick, I think, and they come together in the heart, right? So in order to truly have an open heart, you have to be owning both sides of yourself, right? So there's never a time, like, you know, people are like, oh, I was really, like, it's dark and I'm scared and I don't think I'll come out. And I'm like, okay, that's okay, right? When you're down there, it is scary. It feels like you're never going to come out. And then on the other side, we have these great things happening. We're trying to hold on to them. We're trying to, like, you can't freeze any of it. It is this, right? And depending on your capacity for either direction, like, it can be this, or it can be like this, right? And when you try to hold on to this or fight against this, you get stuck, right? So I am just a huge fan. I don't think our light exists without our dark, in fact. And it's not real if we're trying to pretend we don't have a dark when we're in our light. Yeah?
Can you give me an example of your
light? Oh, yeah. I have a really good, a really deep, well, I could give you several. So let's just do this one. So this is the one that I fight most often, is the, my family struggles with, like, on my dad's side, there's everything from schizophrenia to manic depressive to, really deep depression. My mom's side has, we just say that my grandmother is crazy. Valium, you know, she's antidepressants, like all these things to sort of keep herself on an even keel. And I've been really lucky not to get stuck in the depression too often in my life, like really stuck, but I battle it all the time, like daily, right? Like, so there's like, oh, I'm in this thing, and I'm like, you know, we can be sitting in the room and I'll have said something out loud and something will happen. Someone will say something, I'm like, oh shit, I shouldn't have said that. Like, why did I say that? Like, I hurt that person, or I should have done that better. Why didn't I do that like that? Like, why is this? Why do I teach this way? Like, it's so, if I was just a little more organized, if I was just a little more this, it would be better, right? And suddenly I'm in this, like, spiral of why is everything so bad? And then, so that used to last, and I used to, like, take that, and I just beat myself up with it for hours, days sometimes, for the most ridiculous things. And so I had to start to go, well, I had to. Over time, I've learned to ask a question, like, okay, so what if that is the best thing that ever happened for me and for that person, right? What if I'm just perfect the way I am? which then brings you to the other side of it, where you're like, kind of like, okay, I'm really good now, like this feels really good, and then something else happens and you're down, right? Or you wake up in the morning and you just didn't sleep very well and you got to get through your day, right? So the more you either try to stay in the, and I've been having, so I'm in a new job, and so there's this whole chance to recreate everything, right, at this new job. But I keep doing it just like I've done every other job. And I'm like, why do I feel so shitty, right? Why do I feel so shitty? I'm like, oh yeah, because I didn't set that boundary again, right? Like if I, and it's weird how we try to keep ourselves safe. So I'm like, okay, if I step up and show them that I can do this, then they're going to need me to do it all the time. Yeah. And so there's really, and that's both good and bad, right? So I'm like, no. I had this whole experience where I was like, oh my God, what if I just didn't have to be the best employee? Like, what if that was true? What if I could just be a really good employee? Like, what if I didn't have to be the best one? Like, could I just go with that? Like, can I just go with that? Show up, do my work every day, and like, peace out. Let them pay me what they want to pay me, and I just don't have to be the best. Like, all these things are little, and they're like back and forth. They'll lead you up and down every single day.
And this is the piece, right? I mean, this is the piece of like, this is real life. You know, that this is mystery school. This is being spiritual, right? This is living the work, is owning this kind of stuff. And the truth is, I don't think a lot of people can do that. I don't think a lot of people can sort of sometimes articulate some of these, but this is, and you're normalizing it for other people when you're being honest yourself about how you are or things like that, because I think everyone feels isolated in these ways. The other piece I think is important, and the thing that I was saying, like I'm hoping that, you know, throughout this year that you guys will see and that you'll see in us, is that in all sort of, we were talking about this, but we're a new teaching team, right? Everyone that I taught with last year, Deborah, Cindy, Ona, all these people manifested these awesome, we set goals and they achieved them and now they're gone and they've left me again and I'm abandoned. No. And
I'm see my story.
I'm trying to make a point. I'm a storyteller. I'm a storyteller, so not everything I say is always 100% right. But so Robin was here. Yeah, she was afloat. She was, but so anyway, but so we have this new team, right? It's a bunch of CLs. And you're going to see us battling this stuff and dealing with these things and having to learn from each other and see this stuff. And we were joking this morning, because, you know, Ellen comes out, she does the practicum lecture, and I'm somebody who jumps in on people all the time and asks people to jump in on me. So Ellen is talking, and I said something, and she goes, Did you guys hear that?
I didn't
catch it. And I was like, no, let me just talk. You can have your time in just 1 minute, right? So she says, And so then I'm like, I look at Raylene, and I was like, I guess she doesn't want to be interrupted when she's talking, right? And then I think, like, that's reasonable, right? That's totally reasonable. Just because I don't care if I'm interrupted or like to be interrupted, like, that doesn't mean that she wants to. And then I'm like in my head, and I'm like, this is the first time she's teaching. She doesn't have her PowerPoint. She's nervous about this. You guys know her. Like, I'm developing my capacity for empathy from the right? And then I have to like take it and look at it, and then I have to think like, I always do that. How many other people I teach with don't want to be interrupted? Probably a lot. And then Gwen was like, that's why they all left. That's why they all left you. They told me that the reason they left you is because they couldn't teach with someone who interrupted them, right? So, right, I mean, so, but we were joking about it, right? Like, you know, we were joking about it. And I was like, okay, so that's a piece, but like, you know, I could have easily gone into defense. Or Ellen could be in defense now that I just called her out in front of all of you, right? But you know what I mean? But this is the way we have to work together. Like, this is real life. Like, how do you work with a group? How do we all as CLs or CIs or have these things, have these conversations and talk about it and work through it and be like, whoa, that could have been this, but like, that was great. I didn't go into defense, right? I was like, she needs that space, right?
So at the same time, so that happens. And meanwhile, I'm presenting and I'm sitting there and it's like, we only have so much time. I have no idea what time it is. And Art
goes, no watch.
Art goes, and I go, And then I'm like,
We saw that internally.
Yeah.
We saw that internally.
Oh,
God. What
is she going to think? What did I just do? Such an asshole. My first section, my enforcer comes out. stuff, and I'm thinking, oh,
I'm fired.
I'm gonna lose my job. She hates me. And then we talked about it this morning, and it was like the funniest thing.
So how many times does that like your real life? So you have an expectation of what someone's gonna carry out, but you never shared what your vision is or what your needs are. You don't let them know your needs, and then when they don't show up doing the thing that you never told them you needed them to do, fucking shame on them. That is like taking a bath with a toaster. And then we walk around with a burr in our ass because they didn't serve us the right way. It's like, how fucking crazy is that? How rude! So what if we just woke up and decided none of us are fucking perfect, and we actually have a conversation?
Right? I'm in.
Yeah, and when you're in the place that is, you know, when you're in that lower self, whether it's anger, whether it's, you know, whether it's sadness and depression, whether it's all that stuff, and you need to talk about it, like, you find the people who are comfortable with it, right? Because sometimes you're in too fragile a place to talk to someone who's really in that dark place. Like, sometimes it's just too much because you are struggling with it yourself. So you check in with people, but you still talk about it, right? If you feel open to letting that person, right, internal processor, external processor, some of us have to talk it out. And I'm very much a venter, and my vent sounds ugly, right? You know, well, if the universe actually gave a shit about me, it would look like this. I mean, I had this one thing where I was supposed to do a gift, and I was like, Reese's like, so what happened? I'm like, yeah, so the guy told me, he's like, what did you say? I said, fuck, not you. Fuck off, not you. He's like, perfect, that's how you're supposed to talk to your guys, right? I'm like, they picked me. Like, they knew what they were getting. Like, seriously. Like, no, fuck, not you, right? So then, goes away, comes back, is whatever, he's like this. And I was like, all right, okay. Let's do this. So it's like, you know, like, it's ugly when I'm in that place, and I hesitate taking it to anyone. But that's part of what this soul group is for, right? And I would just like to say that for any of you who are in that place, I'm really good. You can bring it to me. I'm very good at not taking it on, like not taking it personally, not letting it get to me personally, so, yeah.
And as you hear this, then you can think, like, what are the archetypes? Who's this talking? Which are these people, right? You know, and what I will say is we all have this, like, critical parent. The other way to help yourself is that everyone has got this critic, and even if you didn't have a critical parent, you usually have a critical parent voice. Some of us hear it more loudly when you had the one, you actually have a vision with it, which we're going to do a meditation on after this, which I think will be good. But you've got this critical parent, like what this said, but the way to counteract that is to have a nurturing parent. Yep. And if you can develop the voice of someone who is a nurturing parent voice, if you'd had the perfect parent, if you'd had a nurturing parent, what would they say? Sometimes you can even write that out. But if you can build that muscle, that you can then do that, it can counteract some of the criticism that's there. Or if you can say to that critic or that judge or whatever you're gonna say, like, all right, thank you, I hear you. Can you just step into the other room for a little bit while I figure something else out? Like, thanks, you're there. Maybe it's, you know, there's a lot of different work you could do. Internal family systems. Internal family systems. There's lots of different ways that you can conceptualize some of these things, like this critical parent. Like, it could be, sometimes they're trying to protect you, right? But maybe you don't need that to be so loud. And how do you build something else in? So there's lots of tools that we have that we'll speak about that you can help, but these are like different ways to counteract some of this stuff.
I just want to clarify that. You said some of us have a critical parent. I almost want to call that out and say every one of you have a critical parent. The people who don't have it, just, it's so much, it's droned out. You don't hear it anymore. It's part of your running tape, but everybody's got a little something in there kicking your teeth back down in your inner talk. And it's whether you hear it and admit it or whether it's so prominent that it's just it's the muzak on the elevator and you're immune to it.
And there are drugs that stop it too. Prozac is really good. You really can't, I'm not kidding, you really cannot stop that. Actually, Prozac is a really good one. But if people just have constant, like, sometimes that just quiets it down and people will say, like, I can't believe it's actually that quiet in the world. Is this what your mind sounds like? Is this, I mean, so there are, like, I'm not pushing drugs, but I'm just saying, like, you know, there are certain things, like, when it's to a point that you really can't get past it, there are things. And the other thing, you guys, is we're thinking about in the world, everyone you work with, everyone you deal with has one of these also.
Yeah.
And they're battling their own demons. And I think that that capacity for sort of empathy for the world and for other people and knowing people's profiles and knowing that, you know, creative idealists or thinkers are scared, and that is their root of what it is. And so trying to ground them, trying to help them feel safer is the way you get them out of the defense, right? And you can do that in lots of different ways. But that's sort of the ways we deal with the profiles in the third year here is to, and we ask you a question of like, where is your creative idealist? When are you in your core and when you are in your defense? And that's to help you sort of realize that you have this in you too. We all have the five profiles. You may have two that are prominent, but you have little pieces. Like Lisa was saying, Arden has a knowledgeable achiever in her sixth, right? That's like the chart. But like everyone's got some creative idealists, but when you go into thinker or when you go into fear, what makes you feel safe? And then that is translating to how do you help other people feel safe? Grounding them, energy exercises. Other people, who's a creative idealist or goes into fear that has someone that how can people help you?
Oh, I just was answering the first question. Uh-huh. I hadn't thought about the how.
I have an idea.
Okay.
By seeing light versus darkness, humor in the situation.
Making a joke. That's it. Finding humor, laughing at it, calling it out, making a joke. That usually gets creative ideas because they want to play. But when they're scared, if you can make a joke, then that really, it helps a lot. Other people have thoughts, ideas, how to help creative idealists?
I think in that key to that too, if I might add, is that it has to also be really said in a joking way.
Open-hearted, so not criticism.
Right. Yeah. Or if it's like, was that really a joke or was it not a joke?
Yeah. It needs to be clear.
Right. Yeah.
Can help them ground their energy.
Ground. Sometimes Raylene will just stand beside me. That's what I'll say.
That's
right.
Yeah.
Yeah, and the trick is, my trick, you know, because Reese will say, you can't ground a CI, so I will always ground myself, and the person will follow as far as they can, right? So I can get pretty grounded, so then that helps them just come a little bit further in. I work in software, so there's a lot of, you know, there's a lot of CIs, like in the programmer world. So I have learned, like, and in a funny way, I've just learned to be like, hey, like I had that Mark was on my team, and he'd come to meetings, and literally, we all eventually thought it was hilarious. Like, people tried to make it unprofessional, but I was like, seriously? Like, that's why he gets all our shit done so fast. Like, you can't, like, you know, so he'll come to meetings, he'll be on his laptop, right? And then somebody will say, like, blah, 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 and Mark was blah, 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 and he's all, and I'm like, Mark, like, you're at the Mark. We need you in the room here, just 5 minutes, just need an answer. And he's like, what? Oh, yeah, blah, 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 blah. You know, and it's like this, you know, trying to just, you know, make everybody realize, because, he was, the things he would do that were just awesome. He would get a phone call, and it didn't matter how many times we'd say, we'd be in the middle of, like, a major meeting with a client, he'd get a phone call and be like, hello? Right? And he's like, on the phone, and we're just like, all right, it's Mark, we're just going to laugh at it, because what are you going to do, right? I mean, it's not him to be, like, all tightened up and professional. You wouldn't survive.
Right. And creative idealists, and then unless you say, and the creative idealists, the other thing I will say, and you see this in Reese a lot of times, like, we have a lot of ideas and we say a lot of things and we mean them when we say them. And then we forget them.
Right.
And you're left expecting us to do what we said.
Right.
Right? Which is reasonable, but we've completely forgotten, right? So like I'll say, like, okay, I'll get that to you. And then I don't. Now, for me, the best thing to do is say, remember you said you were gonna do this. I'm not. Like, if you take it personally that I didn't get back to you or I didn't do something I said I was going to do, and you start saying, like, maybe Arden doesn't like me. Maybe this is it. Well, I'm not that important. I'm never important. See, that's why if I was really important, she would have sent this back to me. It has nothing to do with you being important. It's to me being a thinker, right? And so you think about the people you're living with, your partners, your, you know, like, sometimes it isn't personal. I hate to say it. The most of the time, it actually isn't about you. It's just about that person. And I try and I write lists and I do all this stuff, but I will forget this stuff and it isn't personal, but it's hard, especially if Reese forgets to pay you.
or something like that. And then you have an issue with money, which Gwen is going to talk about, because we're going to get everything in we missed for the first half of the day and yesterday. But these issues, like, but or I'll get calls from staff and they'll be like, did I do something wrong? I didn't get paid this weekend. And I'm like, you didn't do anything wrong. Like, well, I said this. Maybe Ellie's not going to get her paycheck because she said, uh-uh. It was the uh-uh. That's why you didn't get paid. The uh-uh. Right? Like, no, please just didn't write your name in the thing. Right? And she could be going down this huge road of, is this all this stuff? Does Arden think this? Is these going to be these things? And it just was like, no, it wasn't about that. And so I just want to say, like, with creative idealists, they're not always completely open-hearted and light, but usually it's not personal. And so if you go into defense and the person is a thinker, just ask them and remind them. And then if they say something like, no, I'm not paying you because you said blah, 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 then you can be mad. But don't be mad before that. Like, get a clarification. So I guess those are the things around the creative idealist pieces that I think are just important.
Yeah, it's great. They're actually a great practice for not taking things personally.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
Great practice. Yeah, I had to learn with Arden the first time because I would, when I first started teaching with her, because, you know, I'm like a, you don't have to, you really don't have to pay me, but you're telling me that I'm doing a good job is really good. And it's not like Arden, but she forgets, right?
I'm so bad at praising my staff.
Yeah, and so eventually I just realized, like, it had nothing, so I'm like, okay, I guess I'm going to have to be like, good job, Raylene. Yeah. All right, we're good. And if Arden hasn't told you you're doing a bad job, you're doing a good job. Like, it's just good. It's good practice.
So relationships, you know, like CIs in relationships. My ex, one of my exes.
I'm going to try not to say anything.
They all live in Texas.
I volunteered to help Jane with divorces because I have a lot of experience.
Oh my God.
Join that club.
My ex before the breakup that got me to come to school, right? She was a CI. And it's like, we'd have to pick our son up in school, her son up in school, and she'd forget. You know, and I'd get a phone call from the school and be like, you know, no one's here to pick up Will. And of course, I'm like, what the fuck? So somehow I would turn that into, I mean, eventually I would get to, she doesn't care, she doesn't love me, we're going to split up, we're going to get a divorce. And I'm in, you know, I mean, it turned out to be true. But so I have a new girlfriend post school, right? And the first time we're going to go someplace, she fucking forgets about it.
We
were
working
CI, right?
Oh.
And I'm like, oh, she's a CI. That's okay.
Yeah.
Exactly, right?
Completely different. Yeah. It was like, one was all about she doesn't care about me, and the other one was,
oh, that's school for you.
That's school for you.
You know, and that's the difference between life before and life after getting profiles and archetypes.
All right, everybody. Do you want to talk just a little bit about? So we need to make sure that we talk about ethics and we will read it. And we'll do a little lecture. But as what Lisa said, I think reading this book is important, even if you're not going to be a table healer. Here it is. If you didn't read it, here's what it looks like.
It's such good stuff, and it really. I mean, it's your code of conduct. So even if you're going into the healing arts in whatever form that calls you to it, it's always the do no harm. And it just tying into the last of that conversation, like, if you go into the conversation feeling like everyone's doing the best that they know how, I'm going to do the best that I know how, that kind of sets the stage for a healthy ethical place to come and enter. And we want to put this in the context of money. In this particular conversation, it's part of that survival skill, that the survival chakra bases. It's one of those foundational big juicy pieces that messes a lot of people up, and it's this beautiful thing that we inherited from generations of old. So we probably, a lot of us came from a family that potentially was in a place of lack. So how many of us, you know, were touched by the Great Depression or something generations ago? This is an example of how this tribal league has passed down generation to generation and passed into the DNA. It's an incredible thing. So as we're looking at ethics, it's a place of neediness. And those survival chakras are closer to the crown because they're heavier. They've got more mass. It's just taking care of the foundation of this. And so looking at
I find one of the biggest things personally, and of course I'm seeing this through my own aura, my own energetic field, and how it pertained to how I was able to work through relationship with money. So many times it's not even the money. Money is just a trigger word, and it's energetically not even the thing. So it's often tied with need, having needs met, having your basic needs met, and that enoughness, and is there enoughness? So in terms of, I hear a lot of people when they're getting ready to launch into practice, one of the hardest things is trying to determine where your value is. And if there is a discomfort in getting to that moment where I'm about to ask for money because I am entering a professional relationship and you've sought me out of all of the other choices for a particular skill set that I have, if there's not a really clean way that you're able to establish that what you bring into this world has value and you can't cleanly ask for that, you can't get your needs met. Because if you have to close your practice, because you, there, energetically, money is energy. And if, but there's a reality to it as well. If you can't eat and pay your rent and your practice closes, you've shut down that avenue of healing for how many? So understanding your value and worth is a really important thing to creating that ethical boundary. And also there was one piece in the book that I loved that they touched upon. And I think that this, I have three businesses. I went from a place of working for someone else for decades and decades and decades and exceeding at it. Didn't even know my entrepreneur, my funtrepreneur archetype yet. And now I have three businesses and I love it. And one of them is a restaurant. There's a healing practice across the hall. Love, love, love. And I watch a lot of barter. And it's an amazing thing that a lot of people do. But one of the things that they drew in this comparison, it's like, so you have a lawyer on your table and you start asking legal advice. Does that mean that you're afraid that you're not going to have enough resource to actually go get legal counsel outside of your practice? So there's these like clean boundaries that that you should think about when you start going into practice and knowing that it's manifestation, there is enough. Creating a mindset that's healthy. So that actually money, one teacher I worked with, she shared this incredible concept, money's not even real. And I was like, what you got about this? She's like, if every single person on the planet withdrew their currency from whatever institution it's in, there's literally not enough coins in the world to back it. So it's all bullshit to begin with a lot of zeros behind our name. So if we look at it as an energetic flow, and if you are not in alignment with understanding that you can create that flow, that ebb and flow, you can't constantly be giving without receiving. And that's basic inner work. And it's so tied up and it shows up in our financial world as well. So as we start to, in whatever way you're gonna be looking at incorporating in your energetic healing and what you're doing. It's just something to really, this book is a delicious tool to just really get clean with what it is that you're bringing. And I had to do a lot of work around that, and it comes down to that self-worth piece. Yeah. And if I am afraid that at the other end of an ask, there's a rejection or a failure or fear of abandonment, or there's like usually four biggies that'll come up: rejection, fear, abandonment, and or failure. And those bastards will stop you in your track. It'll stop you from getting up and showing up for the next day if you allow it. When you start getting really in tune in your practice about, I have a gift that I am able to bring whatever your light is, and they chose you for a reason. So if you don't come to a clean ask, then you're gonna eventually not be able to have that freedom to keep creating that healing space that you're doing in whatever it is. So it's a beautiful thing to dig into. Money is it's not going to change who you are, in fact. And that's something that some people fear of having it, and it's cumbersome and it feels heavy. It won't change who you are. It will only amplify who you are. So if you're a douchebag and you get $1 million, you're going to be a really big douchebag. If you are fabulous and you get $1 million, how much are you going to go get a coffee and leave a $100 tip? Like, what kind of lives are you going to be able to change when you call that resource in? So it's just an incredible thing to think about what it will enable you to do. And once you get out of survival mode, because now all of a sudden you're in a place where you've cleanly been able to create that flow, and you're not only exhaling, but you're inhaling as well. So you get in that healthy space. It brings you into that next level where I'm going to stop worrying about spending my energy manifesting my basic needs getting met. I'm going to free up everything I've been putting into getting that strike going, and now we can start getting to like that legacy.
Right now you can move up to like the second chakra. Like, yeah. This is, money is about survival, and what I will say is, if you are starting a business, again, figuring out your worth. What is the right price? How do you decide this? And there are people here who can help you. So like, yeah. Lisa Campion, also, she'll do a little course on business. How do you set this up? If you want to be a table healer and you want to do this, you do need to set the right price. Yep. And you need to do the things you have to do to manifest it. And you want to clear the issues around how it is about value. Do I have value? And what I will say is, if you're someone who doesn't need money, and because that you are independently wealthy, or if you have something like that, I will say that I had one student who didn't want to take money because she didn't need it. And I insisted that she get paid something. Because that, not only is it a currency, right? It is a currency, and she needed that for her own self-esteem, right? Yeah. Even if it was $10. And a lot of times people want to give you something to thank you for it. And maybe it doesn't have to be money, but yep. Giving it to you is something. There are, in a lot of programs with the sliding scale, they'll even say, like, you need to pay $1, because there is something about people having value and giving value to you and honoring you in a different way. And it shouldn't have to be money, because it isn't real, but sometimes it is. With your practical clients, they are probably going to want to give you something. You could say, you can't pay me. At the end, they may want to give you a Starbucks card, or they can give you something like that. Don't say, I can't take anything. You can take that. Okay, you can take something from them if they want to give something. They're not required to, but they can. If you don't want to take something, or if they say, I really feel like you've been giving me 8 healings, I'm getting all this, I want to do something, one thing that you can actually ask them to do is to write a letter to your teachers. We usually give a lot of like letters to the teachers, but you can say, you could just write about your experience in this. And sometimes I'll get a letter for like, dear so-and-so's teacher, this is what I got from this healing, right? I mean, it's not for me, it's for you. But they could tell you about what it was. They could give that insight. That would be a gift they could give to you. So there are ways that people can pay you and thank you for what you're doing in the practicum that isn't money. But I think it is. I mean, I think the piece around some of these ethical issues is, if money is an issue and it's a stuck point, dig into this book.
Yeah.
Right? Dig deeper into that. Yeah.
So I've had clients in the past, when I was a healing energy body worker, that if I gave away my session, value.
Yes, yeah. Exactly. Right. Yeah. This is an important piece.
Anything.
Yep.
Absolutely.
Nothing. You know. That's what I was saying. Like, people want to, you know, do it. I mean, that's the piece. I mean, these people for your practicum, they're not paying you. They're going to be doing this. You're learning. It's an intern, and they can still do something. They can give you. They can tell you their experience. That's a huge deal. That will help you. Right.
Yeah. What I did on my field trial. I asked people, I said, you're on a community book, what I want is 2 things I want in the middle of the sessions. I want you to send me an update about what it's been like for you, and at the end, I want you to send me the final thing of what it's been like for you, not what I want. And everybody did it. And they wrote an intro thing, and they wrote an end thing. And it was great, because I got all that feedback.
Or something. So those are the pieces around some of that stuff. One piece, I keep thinking all these things because I'm a thinker, but one thing I just wanted to say is, one thing we were laughing about this morning also when we were talking about the was that I said
I want you guys to come as adults. You know, and Ellen was like, I can't leave you a word as adult. Arden, you cannot speak to charismatic leaders and tell them to be adults. And that triggers people. I wanted to just, like, jump out of my skin when you said adult. And then I was like, okay, so she's got issues around, like, adults or what adults are. And then the whole time, I don't know if you noticed it. You probably didn't because you didn't say the word adult, but I said the word adult. And then Reese probably said 10 times, give up being the adult. I don't want you to be the adult. You don't need to be the adult. And I was like, I just told them that we have to be adults. Like, so there's like, you hear these voices and everything. But so I do want to clarify. We've made a lot of, what it, you said, a self-cleaning oven.
Yeah, think of it as self-cleaning oven.
We want you to be a self-cleaning oven. What did you say? You gave me, everyone gave me different things, not the word adult.
You know, instead of saying adult, it's like you have to own your own stuff.
Yeah, right. We want you. I want you to show up in a way that you are can be honest and can be like, you know, you realize. Like, I just want you to show up in a way that you can be present and be willing to engage in this way and not sort of run away from these things. And the other thing I meant to say is, you also have a lot of choice in this. Like, if you don't want to come to class, don't come to class. Like, I'd rather you be here and be present than show up. Like, if you have to take the time to go take a nap because of this, like that's okay. You know, if you don't want to go to this healing until 9:30 at night. Like last night, I left.
Oh my God.
I left at 9:15. And I was like, I am not gonna feel guilty about this, right? I have to drive home, I'm gonna teach, I'm gonna do these things. Like, you know, and so this is like, how do you, and maybe you would always stay and feel guilty about it or stay and be resentful. Yeah. Don't do that. That's being an adult, just saying, you know what? If I stay, I'm gonna be resentful. I need to go home and see the kids and do this stuff so I can be here tomorrow and not be mad at Reese.
Right.
And so then you leave. That's a clean way to leave. That's what I mean by being like quote unquote, I guess it's just about being clean. That's what I'm hoping for in the third year.
Hence the self-cleaning oven.
Hence the self-cleaning oven.
So having a need
and be met.
You
know, last
year
I
would
say I'm gonna stay or now. Well, if I'm gonna stay, I'm gonna listen and be part of it, not sit here today.
And play Candy Crush with
you. I was gonna do that.
That's what I was doing. Ellen goes, Ellen comes up to me and she goes, you're playing Candy Crush? And I was like, I should leave. She's like, you should leave.
I'm not
going to date you. Good luck if she lets
you in November. I was playing Orange's Friend.
I was going to say, wait, I was like, wait a minute. I saw what you were doing.
I had to settle back. My daughter and my girlfriend were there.
And whatever is said in this room stays in this room. Can I just share a funny
story?
Shit! This is why I don't record. This is the problem.
You can edit out that last part. La 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 la.
It's definitely on. Okay.
Really? Stop trying to talk and pretend that you're Arden.
He doesn't always listen to these, but if he does, then sorry, Reese.
This is affecting my Arden
impersonation.
You can just cut that part.
No, I just want to share a funny story. We're talking about fear not being real. And I had this big aha, I don't know, like 5 or 6 years ago, my husband and I jumped out of a plane. And it was something I never wanted to do. I don't like adrenaline, but in my personal development journey, if I can jump out of a plane, I can do anything, right? So we're walking up, and the guy that I was, what are they called, tandem,
yeah,
right?
Yes.
He's like, so why are you doing this? And I was like, well, I'm afraid of heights. And he was like, no, you're not. And I was like, no, I am. He's like, no, you're afraid of falling. And that was, like, so powerful, because fear isn't real. Like, what you think you're afraid of?
It's not the falling, it's the landing. I just had a hard sneeze.
But what you think, like, in that moment, I was getting on the plane going, oh, this is even bigger than I thought. Like, I thought I was just going to jump out of a plane. But really, it actually made me look at so many other things, because what you really think you're afraid of, really, well, I was afraid of hitting the ground. It had nothing about being in the plane, right? So fear not being real, like, to the earlier conversation about, like, what is, like, dig deeper. When he ever said that to me, I was like, oh, this is worth all the money.
Right.
And
but
I didn't die.
So. I want
to
thank
but
you
were
for
you still
that.
Afraid that?
And I feel like I got my legs cut right in half when I wasn't. Nothing was said to me. I was talking about that, and I feel like you just cut me right off.
Sorry.
Oh no, that's okay. But it's really good for me because I'm listening and I'm seeing how I'm reacting to all this, and I could really pick up. Okay, what's really going on inside of me? And I love what you were saying, so I was able to hold it. Not take it personally, which is really new for me, because normally I would have said, fuck you, or I wouldn't want to get up and walk out of here.
I shouldn't have come back.
So,
do you want to finish saying what you were going to say? Do you remember it?
No. No, it's all good. It's, I feel like that happened for exactly the right reason. Okay.
That is huge.
That's big that he just said that.
That
right?
is huge. Yeah, it is.
And
anchored that in because this is going to inform as you start unpacking all your shitstorm, what's on the other side of it, that thing that triggers how do you leave
exactly
growth
how I react
right
to it.
There.
Yeah. And you didn't leave, much. Right? And you said it.
I know.
Yeah.
I know.
That's awesome.
So if you had, see, that's how the universe works. And when you have a sit, fear isn't going to like, all right. And so, and what it is, so, and I feel like I would have loved it if you would have said, can you explain what you mean when you say that fear isn't real? Okay, and that's what I felt like you didn't give me a chance. And that's what I love when you just said, because if you hadn't said that, I wouldn't be speaking like that.
Love it.
And I wasn't gonna say it, I thought it like 20 minutes ago, and I was like, it's over, it's over. And then I was like, oh no, let me just share the later.
And I will say this, I am sorry because I will sometimes cut you guys off and we will do it, and I will say this, that you should definitely say something and we can go back, or you can raise your hand or stand up or something like that, because the truth is we do have an agenda and we are so far away from it that I want to like get those things in so I can get like Reese too, like the fire hose of just trying to like remember everything and get it in and end up like sort of doing that. And but what I really truly do feel like is your process and what you guys go through of being able to speak out and do the kinds of stuff and say that stuff is a really important part of this. And I don't want people to feel unheard or unvalued. That's the last thing I want. And sometimes we will steamroll you because we're trying to get some things done, which I really want to get to this meditation because I promised Robin that she could do it.
I really am okay. I'm fine if this doesn't happen.
But no, I think it's really good. I think we should. So if we can go in and just, we'll just take like 5 minutes to get there. You can go to the bathroom and then we'll do that. But thank you.
Ken, that was so awesome.
Yes.
And so there's ownership.